Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Good back. Mercedes takes off for second. The pitch gets away. Here comes Abreu. He will score. White Sox win. They win it. The Royals will challenge the call at the plate. It was close. Headsets are still on. Both teams at their respective dugouts. Many White Sox players are standing outside the dugout, and the call stands! White Sox win. The Royals over in their dugout can't believe it. The final score, the White Sox 4, the Royals 3. We got to take a breath.
Pretty crazy ending. It was bang, bang. I think if they had called him out, they would have stuck with that call. But the umpire right there called him safe.
Oh.
And then they went back, and it was, did he touch him? Did he get him? I can't tell. Game over.
Cap, that was just so ridiculously close. No idea, but I'm glad it was Abreu that's the guy that slid in, because he's been the story all the entire series against Kansas City. Very happy to see the White Sox win that game.
Chuck Garfine is our White Sox insider. He's a star at NBC Sports Chicago, and he and Ozzie and Big Frank pre-post are much must watch. Chuck, good morning. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'll tell you this, the way I'm feeling right now, I don't always love replay, but this morning, I love replay.
That was amazing, man.
Yeah, your initial reaction to that, Chuck, when you first saw it, safe or out in your mind?
Well, I mean, initial reaction was, I don't know. And then I saw the replay, I should say actually replays, because there were a couple of replays where you're like, oh, he's out. But then there was this one where it's like, it literally looks like he somehow, some way, magically slid by the tag. And so I agree with you. If the call on the field had been that he was out, that would have been tough to overturn. So I get what replay is kind of doing there back in New York. But, I mean, it's insane. Like you said, the bookend of this weekend, the bookends, it was Jose Abreu. First game, I mean, you couldn't write a better script. First game of this doubleheader, he has that awful collision with Hunter Dozier, knocked out of the game. He says he wants to come back for game two. La Russa's like, no, that's not happening. Then the next day, he comes back. I mean, meanwhile, Hunter Dozier is on the 7-day concussion list, and he hits the home run on Saturday, and then Sunday races home to give the team the win. I mean, I've never seen, honestly, Jose Abreu more excited than when the replay ruling went in his favor and the Sox won the game. He's in the dugout going crazy. It was a glorious ending to the weekend for Jose Abreu and the White Sox.
Chuck, I'd like to know if you, like my partner, are in a cold sweat because, oh, my God, the Twins are on the schedule again. Are you terrified again?
That's not. First of all, Chuck, before you answer that, do not mischaracterize me. You're going to have to learn what satire is. You've only been working with me since August and know me for 20 years.
I'm kidding.
No, you really believe that Chuck and I are huddled, scared to death of the Twins.
Wouldn't shock me, but I don't think you are. Chuck, are you still terrified of the Twins?
This is a North Side interpretation of White Sox angst.
Oh, no.
That's
wow.
What this is.
Oh, here we go.
I heard it from Sylvie. I'm hearing it from you, Cap. You guys need to, like, get a grip on really what's going on there. I think it's a little jealousy. I think it's a little Cubs fan jealousy. You wish you had a series to look forward to like this. And you're rubbing it in our faces.
Oh, yeah, John Lester on the hill tonight at Wrigley. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so, well, what I'm talking about is, well, yeah, go ahead and relive your 2016 days. Okay, what I'm talking about.
It's a high school reunion for the Cubs tonight.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a thing. I'll admit, I had something about last week's series with the Twins just because, listen, the White Sox have been playing great, and I'm just still stunned that the Twins are where they are in the standings. And I think it's only a matter of time before they wake up. I did not want that to be last week against the White Sox, because I've seen this time and time again over the years. This is no reflection on who I think the White Sox are going to be and who they are this year. It's more of like, I mean, I've got it in my soul that the Twins wake up and they usually take it to the Sox. If not last week, it's at some point. It could happen this week, but I certainly feel better about the White Sox that they, you know, this team faced the team that won the division last year and they swept them. So even if the Sox lose 2 out of 3 in this series, I just know that they've already shown against the Twins that they can face them and beat them into submission if necessary, and that's what they did last week.
I'm scared to death. So let's talk a little bit about Moncada. Help me out, Chuck, with Moncada. Okay, so I don't mind him being in the lineup every day. I think he plays a pretty good third base. I just wonder about his instincts sometimes. Like, for instance, you know, the other night on Saturday night, going down the first baseline, sliding into first, that's always not a good idea. You don't want to get injured. We have enough Sox players that are injured. I wonder about his instincts defensively at times, too. Could you give me the good and the questionable about Moncada as a player?
All right, so I'll flip this on you a little bit.
Okay.
So instincts, okay, I hear what you're saying. I think he actually has pretty good instincts. The thing that that's actually impressed me about Moncada in the two plays that you mentioned is motivation. Will to win, this, you know, steal a Hawk Harrelson phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could watch Moncada sometimes and look at his body language and you have to wonder, like, does he really want it? I mean, how much does he want it? I know he wants to win, but how much does he want to win? When I see him, you can question his decision to dive into first base. It's a bad move, but he really wanted that base. He really wanted to keep the inning alive. And then in the ninth inning, he blows through a stop sign from third base coach Joe McEwing to score. Why does he do it? He really wants to win. So you could question his instincts, but what I'm seeing, what it's revealing to me is he's inside him, because you can't measure that, the heart thing. You can't always measure it. You just only look at it. There's no sabermetrician who can tell you that. I'm seeing a guy who really wants to win this year, and that's what I'm taking from those two plays.
So as you watch this team play, Hoodie and I were talking about, you know, you hope that you get Robert back. You hope you get Jimenez back. But I got to tell you, man, this team looks, with two huge pieces out, this team's really freaking good. Really, really solid. And I still think there'll be an addition, because you don't know what those guys would give you in September. I still think Rick's going to add another piece. Do you?
As we sit here right now, I would say yes. The only thing is that where things are today might change and probably will change in July. And what I mean by that is, I think what's going to happen, this is my guess, I mean, assuming everyone else stays healthy, they're going to reach, say, the middle of July. They're going to see where they're at in the standings. And they're also, I'd like to think, they're going to have a better idea about Jimenez and Robert and what the chances are that they could come back and when they'd be able to come back. I think that's going to weigh into what they do and when they do it. And it's if it's not clear that Jimenez and or Robert are going to be back, if not in time or say by September or at all, I think that will then weigh more into the decision about who they get and how big of a player they get. That's just my feeling, because you don't want to force it. But at the same time, what I keep going back to is, say this is a five-year window. 2021 is 20% of the five-year window. So, you know, yeah, you might not know about Jimenez and Robert, but if you know this team has a chance to win the World Series, you're going to do everything in your power to make it happen. So I think right now you're not going to see any kind of big trade, but come July, I think the optics of everything will be different in terms of what they have internally, where they're at, and what they could potentially add externally, and they'll take it from there.
Chuck, we started the show this morning talking about Justin Fields and whether or not Justin Fields will be ready to start for the Bears day one. Will it be week eight? We don't know, but there's a lot of excitement around the new quarterback for the Bears. And so this relates to Michael Kopech in some ways, too. We got a glimpse again against the Royals. Four innings pitched, two hits, one earned run, and five strikeouts. So when do you think will be the time for Kopech to be able to be an everyday starter? Do you expect that to happen next season based on his stuff?
You know, it's a big unknown. And I think it really comes down to, A, what did the Sox need? So say, assume everybody stays healthy. I don't know how they fit him into the rotation right now. I mean, think about it. Where are you going to put him? Are you going to have a six-man rotation? Well, that's a whole other topic, and I don't see that happening. I think he's more of a spot starter for the rest of this season and then see where things are at in August and September. I hope nobody goes down and you don't need him in the rotation. This is a great little chip that the White Sox have. And by the way, I want to throw this at you. You guys want to guess, in 41 innings, how many extra base hits Dylan Cease has given up this year?
I'm going to say
Don't cheat.
Say it.
Four.
I thought you were going to say five. I'm going to go five.
Now, you guys are going four or five. That is a very, very low number. In fact, it is four. It is the lowest in the major leagues. I'm shocked that you guys said that. You guys have been watching. David Kaplan watching some White Sox baseball. I'm impressed.
I don't miss a pitch. I watch both games.
Uh-huh. I'm having fun with you.
Yes. And who is the one on this show? Well, I can't speak for Hoodie because I haven't asked him. I live bet the White Sox in the eighth inning yesterday. Coming back.
I did not do that.
Plus
wow.
120. Take that.
No, you see, Chuck, I'm that pure fan, just watching the game. No,
well, how does that pay out? How does that pay out, Cap?
So I bet 100 to win 120. So they
a big return for a live bet down one. I think it would be more.
Yeah, I mean, I started with 100, now I got 220 in my account. There you go.
I guess you're right. Good point.
Chuck, I have something more valuable for the victory. I got a win. That was valuable to me.
Yes.
It's more than 20 bucks.
To go 1-3 in the series against the Royals, you'd have been ticked off this morning.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the Royals came in on an 11-game losing streak. So, I've been praising the Royals, you know, ever since they started making these moves. I mean, Carlos Santana, I love that signing by them. I think Mike Minor is pretty good, and they traded for Andrew Benintendi. I like that team. I think they're going to be a 500 team. So them losing 11 games in a row, coming, I'm like, you know, for the Sox to, like, sweep them or take three or four, I just felt like the odds were in the favor of the Royals to start turning things around. So, I don't know. If they got the split, I'll take it. Now we got three games with the Twins. Jay Hood, I mean, I might be in your position come game time, but right now I'm feeling better about the White Sox-Twins thing after the sweep last week.
Chuck, we got a roll. We got Matt Nagy coming up. So one all-star to the next. Have a great one, man.
All right. See you guys.
Appreciate you. There he is, the great Chuck Garfine from NBC Sports Chicago and ESPN 1000. Bears head coach Matt Nagy. You have a question, tweet at us right now. We'll try and get them all in. Matt Nagy. Next.
Take that.
Scratch your morning sports itch.
This is Cap and Jay Hood, our new morning show.
On ESPN 1000 and the new ESPN Chicago app.
Jay Hood, ESPN 1000, weekday morning 7 until 10. And Matt Nagy, the head football coach of the Chicago Bears, joins us now. Matt, good morning. Thank you for taking time. You got your rookie minicamp behind you. You got your quarantine behind you. So I ask you this. What would you say going into year four, here's what I want the identity of our football team to be?
Yeah, good morning, Cap. I think, you know, for us, the identity of our football team is going to be a team that plays fast in all three phases. And that's just keeping it super simple, but that's going to be real. I think that's going to be a major focus for us in OTAs and in training camp. And then we want to be able to feel that on game day. So if that's on defense, rallying to the football, seven, eight players at a time, with speed, you're going to feel that. If it's offensively, with the things that we do, whether it's a run play, you're going to feel speed, or whether it's a pass play, you're going to feel speed. And then special teams-wise, the same. So that identity for us, we want to try to make as real as possible, and that's going to start with how we practice. The mentality of our practice, we want to be the fastest practicing team in the NFL, and we don't want to talk about it. You know, we want to make that real and emphasize that, and I think that's, to your question, what we're focused on.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about the offense around the National Football League today. How much has the process and the play calling evolved over the years to where we are right now?
Yeah, it's evolved a lot. And we always talk about adapt or die, and you need to do that in this league. What happens is this, is you have these high school programs that are so many of them, and guys, I played in the Delaware Wing Tee. And I was not a running quarterback. I was a thrower. And they promised me if I go there, we'll throw the ball more because you sure as heck can't run. So that Delaware Wing Tee across the country in high school football is starting to phase out. And now it's all the gun and the spread and the no huddle, et cetera. That filters into college football. And what happens is that college football that we watch and we study and we recruit these guys and we go to the combine and we see what they do, it falls into now the NFL. And so that's kind of how that thing's going. And what we need to do as coaches is make sure that we adapt to what these guys are doing. And so you don't quite see as much 21 personnel, which is just a fullback and a tailback and a tight end and two wide receivers, quite as much just because of, again, where that starts from high school and college. But you find the happy medium, and that's kind of where we're at is making sure that schematically – that we stay ahead, one step ahead, and then defense is once they figure it out, you got to try to figure out the next thing offensively to stay ahead of them.
So I want to take you back to the 17 draft. You're still in Kansas City. From what I've been told, you wrote reports for Andy, for Coach Reed, on Mitchell Trubisky, on Deshaun Watson, and on Patrick Mahomes. And your report on Mahomes was generational talent, do not miss. Mitch, ultimate project, Deshaun Watson, winner, blah, 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 might have injury concern because he had torn an ACL. Now you are here. You're in the head coach role. How did you evaluate the quarterbacks in this draft as compared to what you did in 17 when you and Brett Veach are standing in a hallway, Coach Reed's meeting with Patrick Mahomes and gives you the thumbs up, we're good. How did it change, or was it the same process?
Yeah, no, Cap. It was the same process, and that's the part that to me that Ryan and I discussed. And you know, I think that's the beauty of Ryan Pace is when you go through this thing is we're able to together talk through a lot. And so you know, we've all made good decisions, and we've all made decisions in a lot of different areas, both on and off the field in our lives, where you look back and you. You say, man, I wish it would have, you know, we could have done this or done that. And I think for both Ryan and I, we were able to admit when, you know, we help each other out, we say, hey, listen, how'd you do this or how'd you do that? And so we talked through specifically evaluating quarterbacks. Like we worked through this thing together and he asked through the different ways that we've done things or I've done it in my past. And I asked him the same thing. And then we bounce it off each other and we come up with our way of how we want to evaluate. There was a lot of similarities to how we looked at things in 2017 this year in this quarterback class because it was very similar. You know, there was a bunch of guys in that 2017 class that were all going to be really good quarterbacks, and it's the same thing this year. So how do you evaluate and what are the importances? You know, what are the positives, what are the negatives of each player? And then how do you know what's real and what's not real? So for us, we spent a lot of time, Ryan and I and the rest of our personnel department and coaching staff, on all these quarterbacks. And, you know, that's what was pretty cool in the end is that when it comes down to time where you got to put your grade down and you got to say, okay, this is how I feel about this guy, it was a consensus for all of us on Justin Fields. And that's why when you have that togetherness, especially at the quarterback position, it's really special. And then, Cap, you move to rookie camp, and I know I was virtual for 2 days, but from just hearing the coaches and then from me being there yesterday, and you just kind of see some of the things that Justin brings, that's exciting for us. And now he's going to be able to get with Nick and Andy and really learn what it takes to be a professional quarterback.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy on Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. It's going to be great to see Tariq Cohen back in a uniform and performing for the Bears along with David Montgomery. One of the criticisms, Coach, that you've heard through the press is talking about running the football. From my standpoint, even a 3-yard pass and a great run after the catch, that's kind of like the new running game. How essential is running the football for you in 2021 with Cohen and Montgomery and others?
Yeah, well, being able to run the football, it helps out in a lot of ways. It helps out your offensive line, so they're not always just, you know, pass setting and you know, you're in a pass situation all the time. It makes you keep the defenses honest. And there's different ways to get to that point. I think for us, with David Montgomery, I think y'all got a good idea of what he can do, especially the second half of the season yesterday, and the importance of what it's like when you have that offensive line and the consistency of that depth chart. We didn't have a lot of movement from halfway through the season on. We went and we moved Jermaine Ifedi out to right tackle, and I thought he did a great job there. You know, other than the one tough play that he had at the end of the game against Detroit, he played really well at right tackle. So Juan's done a great job there. But that offensive line, the running backs with Tariq and David, bringing in Damian Williams, and now having these other guys in the mix as well, that's got to be important for us to be able to help out our team. You got to be able to run the football. It sets up the play action where we can take some shots and max protect, but then it also alleviates the pressure off of some of your tackles on the edge with always throwing.
So when last year, as this thing is, you know, you're in a six-game losing streak. Look, Mitch worked really hard. He's a great kid. It just didn't work. And you needed to move on. I think he needed to move on. But when the media keeps harping on you, and you may tell me I'm nuts, Matt, are you going to give up play calling? Matt, are you going to give up? If I was standing in your shoes, and I never will be, hey, I'm the head football coach. I'll do what's best. Don't worry about who's calling our plays. That's between me and my football team. You didn't handle it that way. Why?
Well, I think it's important that, you know, in our situation, again, every year is a little bit different. And there's going to be times where there's been, I'm not the first, and you guys know this, I'm not the first head coach to ever give up play calling duties. And so I've always been a very honest person. I think that you speak to your team with that. And it just, for us, that was what needed to be done at that time. And again, there's a lot of different reasons that go into it, but I always want to make sure that I'm looking at myself and I'm trying to do everything I can as the leader of this team, players and coaches, to give our team the best opportunity to win. And at that point in time, guys, it was just, we were in a major rut, obviously, and things just, it was a struggle. It was hard. And I wanted to try to bring in a relief pitcher and have somebody else call some plays, and Bill did a great job. So that's where we're at now heading into this year. You know, I will be calling the plays, and I've talked to other coaches that I respect a lot that have been through the exact same situation that I went through last year. And in the end, it's a new season, and I'm challenging myself to be better and look at my play call tendencies and continue to keep listening to players. And then behind the scenes with the coaching staff, make sure that we're adapting and doing everything we can to play to our players' strengths. These kids are talented as heck. Ryan's done a great job of bringing in a lot of great talent. And it's our job as coaches to develop. And this offseason's huge to be able to do that and develop. And we're taking things slow. And so now heading into my fourth year with this team, you know, the last 2 years going 8-8, we know we want to do better, man. That's what the goal is. We know everybody wants that. The city of Chicago, all our fans, our coach, we all want the same thing. And trust me, we're doing everything we can to get to that point so that we can, in the end, be the last team. But there's a process to it. And I think, you know, with the draft and where we went, And being able to get Justin, that's a start, but there's just so much more to it. And that's why we're excited to get going with the whole process with Andy, Justin, Nick, and the rest of our team.
Matt, we know that there's always red tape when you're trying to get the quarterback that you're looking for. And that draft, who knows what it would have broke for you, but you were able to get Justin Fields. So personally, as a head coach, as a football person, how excited were you on draft night when you realized that Justin Fields was available for you?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's a crazy deal when you're in that draft room. There's so many emotions that go on, and it all happens so fast. You're kind of in the moment. And so it's almost like 3 hours later when the draft ends, you really sit back and you're like, wow, you know, that's when it kind of hits you. And, you know, these are big moments, and we understand that. We know that, you know, we feel the positivity. We feel the excitement with Justin. But at the same time, there's also, look, for all of us, we got to make sure that this thing is handled the right way. And as hard as that is sometimes, and everybody has their own opinion as to what that right way is, and I understand that. But it's our job as coaches, it's my job as a head coach, to make sure that whatever we do, that it's the best thing for the Chicago Bears. And then when you talk specifically about Justin, it's the best thing for Justin. And I'm sure Justin will be the first to tell you, just like Patrick was in 2017 when I was in that situation, is that this thing doesn't happen overnight. And as much as everyone thinks it does, it doesn't. It takes a little bit of time, and there's an evaluation process to that. So we as coaches got to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make that happen as fast as we can, but we got to do it the right way. And that's where a little bit of patience is involved. But in the end, everybody has heard me say, we will know when the time is right, when it's the best thing for the Chicago Bears. But at the same point in time, you know, with Andy and Nick and the rest of our players, we gotta make sure that we're doing this thing as a team and not just about one player.
Matt, why sign Andy Dalton when you've already got commitment, I mean, heavy commitment financially into Nick Foles? You didn't know at that point that you could get Justin Fields. You didn't know the night of the draft whether that was going to happen. But what was the rationale for bringing Andy in when you already had Nick?
Yeah, so for us, when number one, you know, that you get into at the end of the season, you have to evaluate. You have to step back. We do, and we go through the whole evaluation process of every position. And when we went through the quarterback position, we as a staff, and then Ryan and myself, we came to the conclusion that we needed to have more competition, and we wanted to continue to grow and get better at that position, whoever that was. Well, who is it going to be? Well, and so now you get into the whole free agent process, and then you know that you have the draft coming up, but that's a what if, because you have no idea how that's going to go. So as we go into the free agent process, we knew that guys like Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and others are available. We know there's other guys that are available via, you know, the names that were thrown out with the Sam Darnolds and the Bridgewaters, but we have to evaluate the guys that are real. And from the three guys that I just talked about, again, it was a consensus to us. It was very clear that we wanted to go with Andy Dalton. And so we did that, and we went full steam ahead, and we brought him in here. And again, I think you see from Ryan's perspective that we continue to stay aggressive in the draft with getting Justin now. That's such an important position to get right, and we want to make sure we are right there. So now between Andy, Justin, and Nick, and then our quarterback coach, Coach Flip, and Bill Lazor, and myself, you know, we feel really good about doing this thing the right way. And you have an experienced guy in Andy that's been there, done that. You got a rookie in Justin that's got to grow and develop, hopefully as fast as we can. And then you also have Nick Foles, who's been a Super Bowl MVP with a lot of experience. So we feel strong there.
So, Matt, I think you recently said we will all know when Fields is ready to be the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. So when will you know when he's ready to start? What is the indicators for you?
Yeah, in time, it'll be on the field. So, okay, so we're starting today. The guys get here. And so we're going to be able to now see whether it's routes on air, whether it's how you break a huddle, get to the line of scrimmage, are you calling the play the right way? What are you doing post-snap? So when the safeties are showing you quarters and all of a sudden the snap of the ball, they rotate down strong and now you got cover three. Well, that just changed every route in the play, or that just changed your footwork now. Now you might have to add a hitch versus a plant throw. All that stuff happens within 2 seconds, and you got to be able to react. And then, oh, by the way, you got to make the throw too with somebody in your face. So, like, as we go every single day, we get closer and closer. We start, per the rules, you're allowed to have a defense across there. So now you go from doing it on air to now you do it on defense to now you get to training camp and things are going full speed to now you get to the preseason and now it's real and you can get hit. And so as all those days go by, we're evaluating and we're seeing, how's it look? Is it good? Is it bad? Is he making the same mistakes twice? Is he improving? Is he taking command in the huddle? Is he seeing the cross dog blitz up the middle? Is he miking the right guy? Is he seeing post-snap rotation? Is he changing up his cadence and going on 1, 2, or 3? You know, where's the play clock at? Is it ticking down to 3 seconds and you still got a motion and a shift? You got to listen to the play set in the headset, you know, the play call in the headset. He hasn't done that. You know, set hut at the line of scrimmage. You know, there's a lot of things that go into play in this position, and there's a lot of things he hasn't done. What's his learning curve going to be like? Is it going to happen fast or is it going to happen slow? Well, if it happens slow, then it means he's not ready. If it happens fast and he's making plays and you see it, you'll know. We'll know. Everybody will know. And then what's that like versus what Andy's doing? You know, and does it make the Bears better? That's about as simple as I can put it.
So if you get in your car, you're driving home, and it's, I'll give you a random date, August 24th, and your phone rings, it's your wife, hey, how'd it go today? I can't hold this kid off. He's phenomenal. He's everything I thought he was going to be and more. Will you start him?
I love the question, but then she's got to say, how's Andy looking, right? How is Andy looking with that? You know, she's going to say the same thing. Would you start him? So that's a big what-if proposition. But we all hope, trust me, that all three of these guys are rocking and rolling and they look awesome, because if they're all looking great, then that makes it for us, that makes the Bears better. So we're gonna see how that thing goes, and there's so much to go to get to that point. But I do appreciate the question.
So, Coach, Daz Newsome was just recently meeting the media, and he was disappointed that there's no Waffle House in Chicagoland. You're a guy that's traveled the country. You've been to a Waffle House or two, like the rest of us. What's your order at a Waffle House?
I love Waffle Houses, and when I was playing in the Arena League down in Atlanta, we used to hit those up all the time, and I love food, too. Like, I'm a big food guy, so I skip the breakfast, though. I go right to, like, the greasy steak sandwich with the cheese and some of the fried onions and then the hash browns. I just want to, like, clog the arteries up as much as I can.
Newsome wants a waffle. What's the nearest one, Cap? Like, Southern Illinois, right?
Yeah, Southern Illinois across the bridge from St. Louis.
Okay, if it's not in the South.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's it.
But if it's not in the South,
that
Coach, I don't want it.
Worth the drive. That might be worth the drive.
If it's not in the South, though, I don't want it. I want to make sure it's deep in the South, like South Carolina. You know, because you know they're putting their arm in there, man. They're getting the grease. They're getting the, I mean, you've got people that know what they're doing down there. I'm just telling you.
No doubt about it. They sure do. And it doesn't matter when you go. It's going to be fresh every time.
Right. Hey, man, we really appreciate you taking time. Know you've got meetings, but thank you for joining the show. And don't be a stranger, because we love talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. I appreciate you having me on here. Let's get this thing going. We're getting the guys in here today, so we're looking forward to it. And we just appreciate, you know, everybody. So thank you, and we'll talk soon, okay?
And you're cool. Even when we're all critical, you know we all want the Bears to win.
Hey, no doubt. Hey, that comes with the territory, man. I totally get it, and I wouldn't want it any other way. But let's do this thing together, and let's go win some games.
Let's have some steak and hash browns together.
You got it. Have a great day.
All right, guys. See ya.
See ya. There he is, Matt Nagy, head football coach of the Chicago Bears. A lot to unpack there. What'd you take away from the interview? 312-332-3776 with Hoodie. I'm Cap, ESPN.
Cap, J. Hood.
Our new morning show.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
So if you get in your car, you're driving home, and it's, I'll give you a random date, August 24th, and your phone rings, it's your wife, hey, how'd it go today? I can't hold this kid off. He's phenomenal. He's everything I thought he was going to be and more. Will you start him?
I love the question, but then she's got to say, how's Andy looking, right? How is Andy looking with that? You know, she's going to say the same thing. Would you start him? So that's a big what-if proposition. But we all hope, trust me, that all three of these guys are rocking and rolling and they look awesome, because if they're all looking great, then that makes it for us, that makes the Bears better. So we're gonna see how that thing goes, and there's so much to go to get to that point. But I do appreciate the question.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy here on Cap J Hood on ESPN 1000. So what did you think of our lengthy interview with Matt? 312-332-3776. 312-332-3776. Your calls, your thoughts of what you heard next.
It's Cap and J-Hood on Chicago's home for sports. Follow the show on Twitter at Cap J-Hood. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago.
So, Matt Nagy, thank you for taking time to join us. Interesting as he talked through the process of how he will evaluate. When will you know when your quarterback, Justin Fields, is ready? What if you're in the car August 24th and you go, I can't hold this kid off?
Yeah.
It was interesting.
He laid down exactly all the things that he wants to see off the top of the dome, giving you the checklist of the things he has to see as far as him reading the defense and whether or not if they change, what do? Your cadence, your leadership, all that stuff. He gave us a dozen things off the top of the dome to say, I need to see these things before I know that Justin's ready.
And the funny thing was when he talked about what's he like in commanding the huddle and calling out the plays, and everyone thinks, you're a quarterback. Do you not know how to do it? Patrick Mahomes, till he got to Kansas City, had never, ever been in a huddle because they ran no huddle in college. And when he first started calling out the plays at practice, he didn't know the cadence, how to command the huddle, but don't let the defensive guys hear what you're calling. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, here's what he's running. And Mahomes is like, how are they knowing that? Because you're yelling.
Capper, after the 12 things he checked off, and when he answered the question, I was thinking, man, Trubisky only did like 5 of those things.
Right.
It must have had to frustrate the blank out of him.
He'll never.
All those things that he was talking about, he had to be like, Mitch, you can only do like 5 of those things.
Right. Right.
And like Nick can only do like maybe 3 or 4 of those things. He's got the leadership that's a huge intangible, but all the other stuff that he was talking about as far as changing defenses and all. And he had to be like, man, I just don't have anything close to what I need for a complete quarterback.
Right.
Oh, correct. Man.
Like, it's complex.
How about running the football? Well, that's a different answer than years past.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to run the football. Well, you should be able to. Montgomery, Cohen, and then the
Damian Williams.
The Damian Williams, the other kid that's on this roster as well. On this
and the
chart.
Kid you just drafted.
Yes. So, Herbert. Khalil Herbert.
Khalil Herbert.
Yeah, so that's so he says that running the football is essential. Okay, we'll see.
Good.
Like, we saw that toward the tail end of the season with Montgomery, where he was a monster.
Monster.
As I told you, it's like he was running the football like he was going to be his last. Like, mm-hmm. I better, whatever happens here, I better make as many yards as possible, because who knows when they're going to take it out of my hands.
You know, if you go back, and Meller has it in his computer there, if you go back to the announcement of the draft pick with Eddie Jackson soundtrack underneath from his Instagram story.
Yeah.
Go back and listen to that, because I did last week in the car. I'm like, I got to hear that again. And I listened to it, and when you hear him go, we got ourselves a real quarterback.
Yes.
It's something like that, how he said it.
He said, we have a black quarterback.
He said that as well.
And he said, we have a real,
Yeah. And then he said,
guys,
say the right thing, Carlos. Yeah,
right.
Because he wanted a quarterback there.
Yes. So you know what that meant, talking about someone that can do all those things.
Like they knew they were playing one hand tied behind their back.
Yeah, by tie, we get us a real, you know what I'm saying? Let's go, man.
See?
A real what?
But listen to the whole thing, like when he, like,
a real what?
He isn't hoping they go, yeah, Chicago selects Rashawn Slater. Good player.
Yes.
No, he's like, better say the right thing, Carlos. Yeah, I know all that. I bet you better say the right, like... And he speaks for a lot of that locker room. They wanted a new signal caller. Period.
By the time we had a real, guys, he didn't want to say it.
No question, man.
So
no question.
Well, Ryan and Matt are our football guys.
He's always going to mention the offensive line, too. Like, he feels like he can't do all the things he wants to do without having an iron gate out front. Remember, he mentioned to us the offensive line, how that's important.
Mm-hmm.
We had time constraints. We wish we would have asked about Tevin Jenkins because we'd love to know. Of course, it's too early to tell, but I'm sure they look at him as the anchor on the left tackle position for the next 10 years.
No question.
I know that's what they look at, but who knows?
Correct. Health, all that can factor into it, but it was just really, really great to be able to talk to him. And again, we had 10 more questions each that we had written down we wanted to ask. He had a meeting at 8:40, so we had to spring him.
Yeah.
So, all good. All good. At least we got to talk to him. Our guy, Jeff Dickerson, on the weekend at Hallis Hall, and the interview with Matt Nagy in 2 minutes.
Take that.
Take that.